Hello everyone, my name is Joe Glover and welcome to another episode of the Marketing Meetup podcast. In this episode we'll be focusing on UX, which is something that I think a lot of us think we understand but probably don't. I include myself in that too. We're hearing a talk from an expert on the topic. His name is Tom and he is lovely and he is very, very passionate about UX. Tom really goes through and explains the basics of UX and also about how he goes about optimizing a UX experience for a website development or an app development and how he works with his clients to really make UX sort of work for the client and ultimately work for the user, which of course is the most important thing. I hope you really, really enjoy this talk. And if you'd like any more from the Marketing Meetup, you can listen to the rest of the Marketing Meetup podcasts. There should be 8 more of them. You can head to the Marketing Meetup website, which is themarketingmeetup.com. You can attend an event with more information on the website, or you can join our Facebook group, which is at The Marketing Meetup. You just need to search for that on Facebook. So all that's left to say is I hope you enjoy, and I'll see you soon.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So the first thing I need to get out of the way is whenever I meet people, they say, just you need to tell me how to say your name. So it is exactly what it looks like. It is Tom. And I'm going to leave it there. So, So I run a company called The User Story. We are a UX consultancy based in Norwich. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what UX is, what it really is, and a little bit of the psychology behind the design choices we make and sort of things that it can do for you. And so the first thing first, I mean, we do go through a lot of post-it notes as user experience people. That is not a stereotype. But when I searched for user experience designers on Google Images, I got like this. I got an awful lot of white people standing in front of whiteboards, usually with beards, drawing on walls. And it seems like there's a bit of a stereotype at the moment that like user experience people do lots of sort of ideation, and they go into rooms with lots of people and they kind of draw things on walls and they draw lots of things, but nothing seems to come out of that. Like, we don't really see the outputs of that stuff. So what I want to talk about is actually what UX is. So the fundamentals of UX aren't actually what you might think. So it's actually about connecting three core elements. So the first is tech, which might not be something you'd really think of when you think of UX. Actually, tech is a really important part of user experience and some of the things that we work with. And generally, it's because we can't suggest things in user experience design processes that aren't going to work, that are literally impossible. So we have to take tech into account when we are designing. The second is the user. Obviously, the clue is in the title. The user is a really important part of the design process, but we actually talk to users. We go out and speak to them. We investigate, we research, we find out lots of information, we bring that back into the business and the business. And that's you guys, that's marketers, that's strategists. It's all of the other aspects, and it's essentially the goals of the business. So it's actually about bringing these three parts of the world together. And so actually in user experience, what we're looking for in a person, if you like, is a T-shaped person. Have you heard of the concept of a T-shaped person? So the idea behind a T-shaped person is that you've got a very broad knowledge of a few things, but actually you've got a very deep knowledge of one thing. So it makes you T-shaped. And generally speaking, we're looking for people who really understand the process, who can understand research, who kind of get people and how they tick, or perhaps they're very good at technology, or perhaps they're very good at the business element, but actually have a really broad knowledge of all these other areas. So it isn't actually this. So user experience is generally considered to be this bit, which is the kind of visual design elements. This is the stuff that you see on Dribbble. It's the really nice sort of illustration and animation-y type stuff. It's, you know, graphic designers who now have put UX at the beginning of their job titles to give themselves a nice big pay rise. It's kind of that kind of thing, which it really isn't. Actually, user experience is much more about the structure. It's much more about the sort of architecture of a system, and it's much more about how users interact with that system. So, if you look at, this is the, I think it's the Oxford English Dictionary what they say about what design is. So design is the creation of a plan or convention of the construction of an object, system, or measurable human interaction. And actually, if you think about that, there's a couple of interesting words that pop out there. The first one is plan. So planning means doing things really well. It means making sure that it's going to work before you build it. And it's about coordinating things. It's about making sure that people are actually working together. And the other one which we're really keen on is convention. It's making sure that things work as people expect them to, as businesses expect them to. It's about reusing content, it's about reusing technologies, so that we're not having to reinvent the wheel every time, particularly around the areas of psychology, because we know that there are ways that people interact with things. We know that there are ways that people think. So there's not much point in trying to get people to think in a different way in a lot of the time. And it's about making things as obvious as possible. And actually, in other areas, we like to think of this kind of stuff. It's blueprints. It's actually about really starting at the beginning. And it's about diagramming stuff. It's actually, to be honest, a lot of it is quite boring. But it's about planning things so that, you know, things don't fall down. If we didn't do these sorts of plans in buildings, they would collapse. And so we should do the same sort of thing with our websites and apps and all those sorts of things. And it's the reason why, as a user experience person, you actually write user stories and you help businesses to write acceptance criteria for development processes. So it's not quite what you might expect. So has anyone heard of the double diamond approach to design? No, it's one or two nods. Okay. So the idea behind the double diamond is that it's about trying to get to a really good solution by defining the problem first. So most people tend to, when they're starting to think about how they're actually going to build something, they kind of start here. So they define what it is they want. And then they go, okay, let's think about lots of different ideas, and then we'll hone in on one idea and we'll do it. And that sort of works. But actually, what user experience is about defining the problem first. So we do this exploration stage of what we call divergent thinking, where we're actually exploring all the different nature of that problem. And then we come back in and we try to define that problem very, very well. After which we then go out and we explore lots of different solutions to that problem before we hone in on one potential solution. So, double diamond. And so, in UX, it kind of looks like this. So, the kind of discovery stage of this is about exploration. So, we do loads of work in user research. We go out and interview people. We actually see how they tick. So, not necessarily how they work with the sites that we're using, but actually just what they do in the day. You know, if they've got children, then they're using certain, you know, applications during the day. What are they actually doing with those things? We look at the system that we are perhaps evaluating. We look at the technologies behind it. We look at competitors, and obviously all of the business stuff too, what the goals are. And then it's an ideation that we start to bring that stuff together into the more, you know, the things that you might recognize as user experience design. So, you know, sketching wireframes, drawing on walls, lots of information architecture where we're trying to organise, you know, huge swathes of information, paper prototypes, interaction design, all the stuff you'd normally see on Dribbble. And then it's into the really funky kind of UI visual design element. So I kind of wanted to illustrate that in a quick example. So the Norwich University Arts website was launched early this year. And we actually did a bit of work in the really, really early stages of that project before they actually handed it over to... Is anyone here from Bourne today? Oh, good, fabulous. They designed the website, which means I can say whatever I like. So we actually did the sort of pre-work. So before they were even chosen for the project, we actually started by doing loads of work on preparing the way, laying the sort of the groundwork. And the first thing we looked at was a heuristic evaluation where we assessed the current site for usability. We used Nielsen Norman's 10 usability design heuristics, evaluated the system, and what we do is we take three people to evaluate the system separately. We bring all of those things together, so we try and eliminate as much bias as we can in the process. We then did this kind of stuff. So I don't know if you know the NUA website, but if you've ever looked at it, one of the main problems they have is with navigation. It's a huge, huge site, and there's so many different subject areas. And what we found was, doing some research, is we found that people really struggled with things like the word education, because some business people would go, oh, okay, so do you do courses for business? But then, of course, people who were students were going, okay, well, the education is clearly for me. And so we found that some words had a real different impact in different areas. So through doing this sort of formative research, this is card sorting, we were actually able to come up with an information architecture that worked for the system. Lots of boring graphs. So this is what we call red root analysis, where we're actually starting to work on content hierarchy. So if you've ever wondered about trying to create an interface and deciding which elements are really important in that interface and which you can hide away, this is how we do it. We actually work out how many people are going to want to use a certain element and how often they're actually going to want to use that thing. And that gives us some, again, it's a formative research method so that we can actually go ahead and design an interface based on this. And then this is the sitemap that we actually organised after all this research. So we then ended up with something which was actionable. They could actually go ahead and use. And again, we put this together. So this is a usability test where we tested the old version of the website. Actually, you can see the navigation here. Anyone see what's wrong with it? I take a few guesses. We started to explore actually the usability of this and how people were navigating it, whether they could find the content. Hint, they couldn't. And then we put some new stuff in front of them at a really, really early stage. Bearing in mind, their design agency hadn't been appointed. We were still able to put some stuff in front of them really early. So they have, when the design agency came in to then start the work, they knew what to do. So I've mentioned psychology a couple of times, and you know, psychology is a really, really important part of what we do. It's something that is intrinsic to user experience design. And particularly it's around managing bias and around managing the way that people think. And I need a volunteer. Daisy, would you mind helping?
Yes.
Come on.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to play a little game.
Good.
Do you mind?
No.
Okay.
Well, it depends.
Okay. We'll see how we go. So, do you read the New York Times, first of all?
No.
Good. So, that's irrelevant. I'm just, yeah. It's just to throw you off. Psychological
okay.
mind tricks.
Gosh.
It's not. I'm joking.
Okay.
So, So we're going to play a little game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm thinking of a rule.
Yeah.
What I want you to do is say three words, and those three words have to comply with the rule, okay?
Okay.
Now, you can say three words as many times as you like, and I will tell you whether or not they comply with the rule. But when you think you know what the rule is, you have to say, okay, I think the rule is, and tell us what you think the rule is.
Right, okay. So I could literally just say any
word. You can say three words, but I will give you a clue. The first three words that comply with the rule are apple, banana, and cherry. They comply with the rule.
Okay.
So you have as many three-word combinations as you like to try. I will tell you whether you're right or wrong, and when you think you know it, give me the answer. Go.
Damson,
three words.
Oh, three words. So I just have to say all of
just three words that comply with the rule.
Damson, pear, mango.
Yes, they comply with the rule.
Okay. Fruit. That hangs from trees.
Is that your idea of what the rule is? You only have one shot at getting the rule right.
That is what.
Are you absolutely sure?
Yes.
It is the wrong answer.
What's the right answer?
Has anyone got the right answer?
Cake.
Cake. That's a good idea. Does anyone want to have another go and throw three words at me?
Can I sit down?
You can sit down. Thank you very much. Anyone want to throw three words in? No.
Desk, chair, computer.
Yes, that complies with the rule.
Is it words?
So this is, thank you very much for that, round of applause please. So this is a test of managing what we call confirmation bias. And so the reason I asked you about whether you read New York Times is because they actually did a test on this week, which you can try on their website around numbers, and obviously you'll get the right answer now. But it's a really interesting example of managing confirmation bias in that what we want to do is give three words that we think are correct. We don't want to give three words that we think are wrong. We don't want to test our assumptions because it doesn't feel right to be wrong. It feels a bit wrong to be wrong. We don't like it. And so the same comes with making decisions. And as a business, we make decisions wrong a lot of the time. We know our products really, really well. And so we want to be right. And it's really hard when we're not. So the rule is only three words. What it can also help to do is actually make help customers to actually make choices. So has anyone heard of the jam experiment? Oh, good, one or two, excellent. So back in 2000-ish, a couple of researchers ran an experiment in a farmer's market in America. And what they did was they had a little stall, and on day one, they put 24 different nice jams on this stall, and they said, anyone that comes and tries it, we'll give you a dollar coupon off some jam. And then the next day, instead of the 24, they put six jams on the table. Same deal, $1 coupon if you come and try the jam. So how many people bought jam? Was it higher in the 24, higher in the six? What would you say?
Six.
Okay, most people have said six. Why do we think it's six? Less choice, fabulous. Absolutely. But what's really interesting about this is we don't think we want less choice. Whenever we ask people how many jams they want, they always say, oh, I'd rather have 24, I'd rather have the choice. I want to make sure I get the right one. But of course, we know from research, we know from the psychological reasons, it's called choice paralysis. People do not want that choice. Has anyone ever had tried to buy hosting? Yeah. So Amazon have got a long way to go. But what we also try and do is make use of the way that humans naturally behave. And there's some really interesting, again, little psychological things that we can use to try to make things easier to digest for people. So I've got one more little puzzle. So this bat and ball, some of you might have heard this before if you've heard me talk. This bat and ball costs £1.10. The bat costs £1 more than the ball. So nice and easy question. How much is the ball?
5p.
Is it though? Because if the bat costs £1 more than the ball, then actually the ball must be 5p and the bat must be £1.05. So our brain has made a complete leap there. It's gone, do you know what? This puzzle is so easy. I don't even need to engage. I'm just going to throw the answer right out there. And we're wrong. So fundamentally, we make the wrong decisions because information is provided to us in a little bit of a difficult way for us to grasp. So actually, it is really important that we make, you know, information nice and easily skim readable, that we're highlighting things that we want people to read, and that we, you know, perhaps we're hiding things that they don't. See also GDPR. And, you know, this is why things like selective disregard work. Has anyone ever seen that video with the gorilla where the guys are throwing the ball? Yeah, selective disregard. So, again, it's all these sorts of little ticks and things that, you know, are just naturally present in the human brain that we can't help, which we have to take into account. So, what can UX do for me? Well, the first thing it can do is it can move problems from the wrong place to the right place. This was a really good article, actually, by Ralph Ammer, who I think it was up on Medium this week or last week, so it's definitely worth a read. But he talks about why you should do UX, and actually, the first thing is moving problems from the user. Actually, we want things to be nice and easy for users. We don't want them to be so easy that they don't engage with our brands and our products, but we want them to be easy enough that they understand how they work and that they're able to engage with us effectively. We want to make sense of complexity. This is a boot site from a couple of years ago, and we're seeing so many of these sites now with these huge, great big mega menus. And so what we call information set, which is, you know, I'm looking for paracetamol, where do I go for paracetamol? Pharmacy, department? No, don't know. So it's about trying to give people a clue, trying to at least give them a hint of where to look. And this one, which is really key for so many businesses, and actually it's a huge amount of what we do, is actually about proving UX internally in businesses rather than externally, is this, which is, has anyone heard the term HIPPO before? Highly paid person's opinion. It's good. So what's really interesting about this graph is this is how a bunch of decision makers say that they make decisions inside a company, and 60% have said that it's either designed by committee or by one person who has the highest salary. That's ridiculous. We're not making decisions based on what we think users want, we're making decisions based on what we think we want. So actually applying a scientific approach to design means we get a better approach to design. So UX isn't magic. It's not something that's popped up out of nowhere. It's been around for, you know, dozens and dozens of years. But all it really is good design. It's just about making good choices with the right information at the right times in an iterative way. And that's it. Thank you.